وآل محمد.
Doing a song from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Inhumane and unprecedented atrocities and crimes by the Israeli regime raging against Palestinians in Gaza right after a few hours of respite on Saturday night when Gazans joyfully watched Iranian missiles and drones flying over their head toward targets inside the occupied lines. The West Bank has also seen a surge in violence both by Israeli settlers and occupation forces. Meanwhile, the UN is complaining that Israel prevents its investigators from collecting evidence and talking to the witnesses of the war. Welcome to the Spotlight. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi, and these are our guests in this episode. Daniel Kavalik, human rights lawyer, joining us from Pittsburgh. Also with us is Hossein Al-Bukhaiti, activist and political commentator out of Sana'a.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to the show, both gentlemen. Beginning with Daniel, you know, yesterday a number of bodies were found in mass graves in Gaza's Al-Shifa Hospital with even medical equipment attached to their bodies, you know. And they're said to have been killed by IUF execution style. So another proof of the Israeli ethnic cleansing, which has not been stopped yet. Let us see why this hasn't stopped as of yet.
Well, for a few reasons, I think Israel's decided that they are going to use the opportunity of October 7th to carry out their final solution, which is to get rid of the Palestinian people from historic Palestine, first in Gaza, and then I think, you know, they have designs on the West Bank as well. And they're not stopping it because the U.S. won't stop them. I mean, the U.S. could end this tomorrow if they really wanted to. Israel depends on the United States for about 70% or so of its military hardware and munitions. And while Joe Biden wrings his hands every other day and says he feels bad about the civilians being killed in Gaza, he continues to send major armaments to Israel, including 2,000-pound bombs, which most military experts will say should not be used in an urban setting like Gaza. So that's where we're at. And the rest of the world, you know, sadly, most of the rest of the world isn't doing enough to stop this. Obviously, there's notable exceptions. My brother from Yemen, for example, the Yemenis are doing wonderful work in the Red Sea, Hezbollah. Well, and what Iran did on Saturday was important. In fact, I understand that Iran's attack, Israel's admitted that they have postpone their attack on or their land invasion of Rafah because of that. So, but most of the world, particularly in the West, is doing nothing to stop this, and that's why it continues.
Okay. Now, Hossein Al-Bukhaiti, Israel is preventing UN investigators from speaking to witnesses and victims of the October 7th operation. And this is what the former UN Rights Chief Navi Pillay is saying, and she's now chairing a three-person probe. The question is, why should Israel block the probe? After all, they are saying that we are the moral, maybe the most moral army, as they claim.
Because actually they are doing so because it's actually the opposite. They are the one who are committing genocide. That's why they don't want any international investigation team to be sent to Gaza or any other area, because it will clearly prove that Israel has committed a genocide. And we remember as well, as an example, in Yemen, during the 9 year or 8 year of Saudi Warren blockade, which was backed by the United States and UK, United States has prevented any investigation, international investigation team, to go to Yemen to investigate the crime, because they know that the fines will actually condemn the United States, because all the weapons was used is as well provided to Saudi by United States. It's exactly the same story as has been repeated in Iraq, in Afghanistan, as well during the terrorist war in Syria against the Syrian army, in Libya, and now what's happening in Sudan is all with the support either of the United States or country that's loyal to the United States, like United Arab Emirates. That's why United States actually will keep continue to provide Israeli with weapons, because that is their best or greatest ally in our region, and they were as well not happy with the attack by Iran against Israel. And soon after that, many Western country has condemned this attack, and they have called the United Nations Security Council to meet. But I mean, what Israel has done, Israel has been targeting Iranian civilians and Iranian personnel, and the last attack that targeted the consulate. That's why I think that United States actually and Israel only will respect the one who will retaliate. And that's why it is clearly shown that Israel can continue with their crime, because they are getting a huge support from those countries, especially United States and UK.
Okay. Now, Daniel, UN Human Rights Office spokeswoman, speaking of dozens of Palestinians getting wounded by armed settlers and also occupation forces, and this is happening in West Bank. Of course, today we had a dozen children again getting killed in Gaza. Hundreds of homes, you know, other buildings, cars, they've all been torched in the West Bank recently. At least 468 Palestinians have been killed by the IOF and also settlers across the West Bank since October 7th. So why should Israeli forces help the settlers during their raids instead of stopping them?
Well, because they support what they're doing, and this has been happening for a long time. These are old-fashioned pogroms, right, which we usually associate that term with the terrorist attacks against Jews in Europe, right, in the early 20th century. But these are for pogroms against the Palestinian people. And the goal of those pogroms is to terrorize the Palestinians in the West Bank, to force them out of their homes, off their land, and frankly, out of Israel. They would like to push the Palestinians in the West Bank into Jordan. There's already, what, a million Palestinians living in Jordan as it is. So again, the military shares the goal of the settlers to do that. And so they either just stand by while the settlers carry out these pogroms, or they actually participate in it, and or arrest Palestinians who try to resist.
Mm-hmm. Now, Hussein, let me quote UN Human Rights Office spokeswoman Ravina Shamdasani. She's saying that Israel, as the occupying power, must take all measures in its power to restore and ensure as far as possible public order and safety in the occupied West Bank. And this obligation includes protecting Palestinians from settler attacks, which they're not, and also ending unlawful use of force against Palestinians by occupation forces. And is there any way, this is not happening, this is what should be there, but is there any way, in your opinion, to force the Tel Aviv regime to act this way?
No, I mean, I didn't think so, because we know that Human Rights Watch, as they call in Israel, actually they could actually as well condemn Israel, either without any investigation held by a human rights group or any other international investigation team, because just you can see the footage on the media and as well the amount of killing. United Nations have a great role, especially the UNRWA in Gaza, but they haven't actually helped in actually bringing Israel into court. And as you mentioned, what was happening in the West Bank, we know that the so-called Palestinian government has recognized Israel, and Israel recognized it, and as well it was recognized by many Western countries. So the war on Gaza is not only, as they say, because of Hamas. They have been actually taken land by settlers in the West Bank. They have been kidnapping Palestinian people in their thousands, and as well since October 7, the Israeli regime has killed and injured hundreds of Palestinians in the West Bank. The main idea of the existence and the making of Israel is by those settlers. That's why Israel will keep continue to support those settlers to grab more land, to attack the Palestinian. I know that the international community and as well the human rights or any other group, if they didn't help the Iraqi to bring any case against the invasion of Iraq, where millions of people has been killed or injured based on a lie that about weapons of mass destruction. I think that all our nation and Muslim nation and Arab nation, they should the one be taking the step, not only waiting for the international community to condemn Israel or to condemn United States or to bring them into court. They should actually fight back, because you will only get respect if you retaliate. And I just want to mention what's actually was clear after October 7 that Israel actually is really weak. They couldn't expect that major attack against Israeli army around Gaza. And as well, it's clearly after those months of attack on Gaza, they couldn't eliminate, as they say, Hamas. As well, they couldn't free their the people who are prisoner of war taken by Hamas. And to show that it is only thanks to the United States help to Israel, they could actually continue for this long month. And one final thing, it was clearly as well that Israel cannot, as an example, when it regarding to Iran, they cannot actually target Iran by themselves. It should be with the green light and help from United States and UK. But after Iran retaliation, it is clearly as well that even to protect themselves, the Israeli regime cannot do that alone. They can only do it with the United States and UK and with the help of neighboring country like in Jordan. That's why I think those all country and should take up the step against Israel and to fight Israel, because you are not going to get your land back. You are not going to get Israel into court only if you defeat the Zionist state of Israel.
Mm-hmm. Now, Daniel, let's get back to what Judge Pillay said, the one in charge of this probe into the October 7th attack. She's saying that the probe commission has shared more than 5,000 documents with the ICC in The Hague, collected between October and December 2023. It's also due to present its first set of findings to the Human Rights Council in June. So international tribunals like the ICC and ICJ, are they capable of bringing these Israeli criminals to justice?
I think probably not, or I don't think they have. No, they really don't have the means to do that is the problem, right? You really need some sort of police powers to do that. And you would need to probably have Security Council authorization to have some sort of peacekeeping or you know, military force to do that. And the Security Council will never do that because, you know, the U.S. will veto that such an action. So, you know, sadly, I don't think you're going to see Israelis, you know, individually prosecuted for war crimes. Basically, the West position is that the ICC is for other people. That's for, and at this point, it's for Africans, right? The ICC's only successfully prosecuted Africans at this point, and it's not for the people of the West to have to be subjected to their jurisdiction.
Okay. Nata Hossein, what do you think? I mean, if these international bodies and tribunals are not able to bring all those criminals and charters to justice, what can? Maybe what you Yemenis are doing is the right way, huh? Using the language of force?
I mean, this is exactly. I mean, you just imagine that Yemen is still at war with Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates, but we have this truce for more than 1 year and a half, and after more than 250,000 Saudi airstrike and a blockade and a bad economic situation in Yemen because of this blockade and war, Yemeni actually didn't think twice when they saw what's happening to the Palestinian and that the international community has let them down. They know they felt what the Palestinian is going through, because we have gone through that for almost 9 years. That's why they took a decision to declare war against Israel and to target its ship in the Red Sea and as well in the Gulf of Aden. And this actually is damaging really bad the Israeli regime, as many international reports has said and many media outlets. As an example, Eilat port has been closed. So I think that the countries like Yemen or any other country, if they will take the step at least to cut ties with the Zionist state of Israel, or not to allow Israeli ships to use their seas and their waters, I think that if they cannot bring Israel actually to court, they could actually stop, force Israel to stop its genocide against the Palestinian, and as well it will force it to withdraw, and as well to build and to rebuild Gaza, because what the Israeli regime now want, they want, they might be okay like to withdraw from Gaza, and they want to release all prisoner of war that's in the hand of Hamas, but they don't want to release the Palestinian prisoners, which more than 7,000, which most of them has been taken from the West Bank. But what the Hamas actually as well is doing, they have refused all pressure, either from Qatar and Egypt and any other country, and they I think that the military wing in Hamas is the one now who's making the decision, because they know if they will let Israel go away doing what they did in Gaza, they will do it again, and they might do it at one point in the same way in the West Bank. That's why Yemen has actually continued its war. And as an example, let's say that the United States, when they were actually helping the Saudi against the war in Yemen, and as well supplying them with all weapons and preventing any solution between Yemen and Saudi Arabia, as soon as Yemenis has targeted Israel, United States has sent its delegation to Oman in Muscat, and they have requested to the Omani that they will solve the issue and the war in Yemen, and they will bring peace in Yemen, and salary will be paid, and the economic situation will be rebuilt in Yemen. Why? Because but they asked to stop the attack against Israel and to lift the blockade in the Red Sea. This show you that only by force you can get what actually matter, and you can get what's good for your country.
Yeah, interesting. Okay. Now, Daniel, the region, this part of the world, is tense and volatile, and Saudi Foreign Minister Faisal bin Farhan Al Saud says that a de-escalation must be everybody's priorities, because this part of the world cannot afford another conflict. And has also stressed ceasefire in Gaza and complained that international efforts toward establishing ceasefire are wholly insufficient, in his opinion. So two aspects is, what does it take to de-escalate the region? What can be done to stop the genocide of Palestinians?
Well, I agree that it will not and cannot be stopped without force. It's very clear Israel's ready to go all the way with this genocide and ethnic cleansing. And I think that there will have to be, I think Israel has to be militarily defeated. That's my view. They will not stop otherwise. I have great fear that Israel may use nuclear weapons if it comes to that. I mean, Israel just seems, the government of Israel is unhinged. It just seems there are no limits to what it thinks it will do and thinks it can do to defend Israel. And so, yeah, ultimately, I think there will have to be a military defeat of Israel.
All right. Now, Hossein, what's your opinion regarding de-escalation and trying to kind of restore some common peace to the West Asia region. Is it possible?
No, I didn't think with Israel and with as well Netanyahu leading the Israeli government, he will not stop because he is facing actually charges of corruption, of all those type of things. That's why he will continue actually to target Gaza, and they might as well enter Rafah. And as your guests have said, the only thing to stop Israel is by force. Was taken by force will only be returned by force. And the one who actually must de-escalate is the Israeli regime. They are the one who is actually invaded Gaza. They are the one who killed more than 33,000 Palestinian civilians, most of them women and children, and have injured more than 70,000, have destroyed an entire cities. That's why I think the only thing that will bring Israel to its knee, or will bring Israel to do what Hamas request in this peace talk with the help of Egypt and Qatar, is to continue their attack against Israel, and as well from countries and the axis of resistance in Iraq, in Lebanon, and as well in Yemen. They should widen their attack against Israel, and by doing so, this is the only way to deal with Israel, and this is the only way actually to help the Palestinian.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Daniel, judges, attorneys, UN experts, they're all saying that Israel's criminal acts, murders, unlawful killings, you know, they need to be brought to justice. And how? They're saying that there should be a judicial process that complies with international human rights standards, and that should be done promptly, impartially, independently, effectively, and in a transparent way. But the question is, how?
Yeah, again, I don't see that happening short of a military defeat of Israel, you know. And even then, what body would do it? The International Criminal Court? I don't think so. You could set up a special tribunal for Israel and the occupied Palestinian territories, but that would be done through the Security Council, and the United States would never assent to that. Mm. Maybe the Arab League could do it. But it's got to be done outside, you know, the usual way, because the UN system, it's broken, you know, and the U.S. has guaranteed that it's broken. It's certainly broken to deal with these types of situations, because the U.S. in particular doesn't want it to be done. So if it is to be done, it will have to be done outside the UN system.
All right, on that note, we come to the end of this episode of The Spotlight. Let me thank my guests, Daniel Kavalik in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and Hossein Al-Bukhaiti in Sana'a, Yemen.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, be careful before that bad habit becomes permanent. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, an honor to be here at A to Z. So, we are talking about how we need to be very careful before that bad habit of ours becomes permanent. So, what are we talking about? Well, you know, unfortunately, we have some sort of bad habit lurking around in our personality. And so that bad habit of ours, you know, if it is not cured, if it is not, you know, solved, if it is not fixed, if you will, then what happens is that slowly over time it becomes permanent. And when it becomes permanent, it becomes a part of our lifestyle. And of course, these kind of bad habits, you know, they have a tendency to hurt our Islamic lifestyle. Now, we're not talking about, you know, certain bad habits that, you know, unfortunately, because of the very non-God-oriented you know, systems and world that we live in. Unfortunately, bad habits are considered to be things like biting your nails or talking out of, position, meaning it's not your turn to talk and you do talk, talking out of place, for example, or a bad habit like you like to chew chewing gum. You know, in this non-God-oriented world and these non-God-oriented systems, these are bad habits that are spoken about, when in reality, these are not the bad habits that we're talking about. Yes, these are certain things that you pick up through your life. You know, they might not be proper when it comes to the cultural, you know, or the, you know, status of the society type issues, but that's not really the bad habit that we're talking about, and it's not a bad habit that Islam is talking about. So bad habits in the Islamic context are these, really they're sins. They are sins that we have become accustomed to, and they have become a habit, and they are bad in the context of Islam. Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So we're talking about be careful before that bad habit becomes permanent. And so we talked about in the previous segment what we mean by bad habit. We're not talking about chewing gum, you know, for hours on end. We're not talking about these other kind of petty bad habits, if you will. We're talking about sins as a bad habit. So sometimes, you know, when you're relatively young, you know, I guess even in, you know, 10, 11 and above, and this is where parents have a huge role to play in making sure that, you know, our child doesn't fall into some kind of a bad habit. But 10 years and above, and a lot of our Islamic sociologists and psychologists who work in the Islamic field, they really do talk about how even earlier than that, these bad habits are formed. But for example, if you sense like, you know, that lying is becoming an issue, not telling the truth is becoming an issue, being cunning or being selfish is becoming an issue, for example, watching bad things is becoming an issue, these are all bad habits that we really need to get rid of before they become permanent. If these things become permanent, they are very difficult to cure as one's age goes forward. But still, that does not mean that at any age, with the grace and the blessings of the Almighty Allah, we are able to change. So make sure to get rid of those bad habits before they become permanent in our Islamic lifestyle.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Iran's retaliatory strikes on Israeli occupied territories have drawn admiration and praise in Afghanistan from both the country's ruler, the Taliban, and the Afghan people. They said the reprisal strikes were completely legitimate, justifiable, and have expressed their support for Iran in the face of hostilities.
Long live and fingers crossed to the leader of Iran and to the brave nation and IRGC of Iran for their bravery in hitting the occupying Israel. They did this while many Muslims, like Saudi rulers, are indifferent to the cause and values of Muslim world. Praise Ansarullah of Yemen and Hezbollah and any nation who stands for the Islamic and human rights of Muslim people.
We are happy that Iran carried out the retaliatory strikes on Israel. Every Muslim should feel proud because the bully occupying Zionist regime came under fire. Look, Israeli forces have been oppressing our brothers and sisters in Palestine for decades. It's the time for all Muslim countries to unite and show the aggressors that we can and we have such capabilities.
The Taliban-run foreign ministry issued a statement on Sunday declaring Iran's recent attack on Israel as a legitimate defensive action. It added that Israeli genocide must be stopped in Gaza. Experts say the Afghan ruling authorities' support for Iran's reprisal actions and the Palestinian cause shows Muslims are now united against Israel, and hatred towards the Tel Aviv regime is now everywhere across the Muslim world.
Decades of Israeli occupation in Palestine and its atrocities have made all Muslims hate this regime and call for the regime to be crushed. Over the past few years, the attacks carried out by Hamas and Hezbollah shattered the Israeli regime's grandeur. Iran's strikes against Israel came amid Israel's devastating and deadly bombing campaign against Gaza.
The Afghan people also showed their anger with Israel for its war crimes in Gaza. They call for an immediate ceasefire in war-torn Gaza and demand that the international community help end the war and support Palestine in the face of Israeli invasion. Afghanistan stands firm beside brotherly Iranian nation. Palestinian cause is bringing the two neighbors even closer. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Described as an act of self-defense, the Yemenis regard the extensive missile and drone strikes carried out by Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps on the Israeli-occupied territories as a response to the Israeli regime's assault on Iran's consular building in the Syrian capital, Damascus.
We consider the Iranian strikes against the Israeli entity a legitimate attack and a response to the Israeli attacks that violated Iran's sovereignty by hitting its consulate in Syria. The Iranian attack is a legitimate move to punish Israel and is part of measures to stop the regime's ongoing crimes since October 7.
The public sentiment aligns with the official stance as locals overwhelmingly endorse the Iranian strikes, stating that the Israeli regime and its allies only understand the language of force.
The Iranian attack is supported not only by Yemenis but also by all free people in the world. The Iranian response sent the message that Iran's capability is real and that all it was seeking was to liberate Palestine and stop the crimes by the Zionist enemy. Today we are facing an exceptional operation because Iran had not carried out an operation of this scale since the end of the Iran-Iraq war. Iran has been characterized by patience and deliberation due to the way it deals with hostile states. This is the first time that Iran has carried out a military operation against its enemies from within Iranian territory. This attack was successful, came at the right time to put the Zionist enemy in its place, and proved that Iran is capable of blowing up Israel.
Over the past few years, Yemeni-Iranian relations have strengthened, especially during the U.S.-backed war on Yemen, initiated by the 2014 revolution. This military campaign aimed to restore a U.S.-aligned former government in Yemen.
People here believe that the recent Iranian attack against the occupied territories significantly impacts Western powers, demonstrating unity among the resistance forces in the region. They view the attack as the beginning of the end for the Israeli regime and its supporters. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Pro-Palestinians in France gathered the day after what was reported to be the first peaceful night in Gaza in 6 months. The reason? The night before, Iran launched a historic missile retaliation against Israel, which prevented Tel Aviv from continuing their attempt at genocide and ethnic cleansing. At the demonstration, there was widespread approval, support, and even gratitude and admiration for Tehran's counterattack against the unprecedented bombing assassination at an embassy.
I'm not an anti-Semite, and as a Muslim, I want us all to live together peacefully, but I see Iran's attack as something good on their part. Iran is the only major country which has had the courage to attack Israel and defend Palestine's innocent civilians. This war can easily stop if Israel can finally realize that they are attempting a genocide.
Those who are occupiers do not have the right to legitimate defense, but Iran does have the right, and they used it to defend Gaza as well. Israel bombs and assassinates people constantly. How can people forget about what Israel has done?
Protesters contrasted Iran's actions with those of the French foreign minister last week. After mentioning the possibility of placing sanctions on Israel over Gaza, he immediately backtracked the next day in front of Parliament.
The French government is quite the accomplice in the genocide that Israel is waging right now. Why aren't there any sanctions despite all these deaths? And when France talks so much about defending human rights, it's simply shameful.
French forces claim to have contributed to Israel's defense. In a major blow to perpetual Israeli hopes of escalating the violence, Washington has already refused to join any potential Israeli attack on Iran. It's uncertain if the cycle of Israeli assassination and Iranian retaliation is now concluded, but Israel has already returned to indiscriminate bombing and mass murder in Gaza, despite 6 months of global outrage, the murder of 34,000 Palestinians, and 76,000 injuries.
Will Israel pursue an even wider war? Will more Arab nations be inspired to join the cause of defending Gaza? What's certain is that many are happy that, for one night at least, the guns aimed at Gaza's civilians finally fell silent. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Pakistanis are showing staunch solidarity with the Iranian retaliatory strikes against the Israeli-occupied territories. Social media platforms overflow with messages of congratulations for Iran's effective response to Israel's atrocities, hailing Iran as a courageous champion of Muslim states willing to confront a Zionist regime, especially following months of atrocities against the Gaza Strip.
We are proud of Iran for taking a stand against Israel's aggression. The Palestinians have been suffering for decades, and it's time someone took action to protect them. Iran's attack shows that they won't tolerate the oppression any longer.
I fully support Iran's decision to strike back against Israel. The Palestinians have been living under siege for decades, and it's high time someone stood up for them. Iran's actions give hope to oppressed people everywhere.
The Pakistani government has echoed both the sentiments of its citizens and voiced grave concerns over escalation of tensions in the Middle East. Islamabad underscored the Israeli blockade of Gaza as a significant factor contributing to the recent wave of tensions, emphasizing the urgent need for international intervention to prevent further escalations in the region.
Iran has done the right thing, legally and morally, because Iran has retaliated against Israeli unwarranted aggression and attack on Iranian diplomatic installation in Damascus. and that was a violation of UN charter and international law. So what Iran has done is the right thing. They have responded in kind, and they have taken the battle to the aggressor, and they have hit Israel.
The people of Pakistan emphasize the urgent need for global intervention to halt the escalation of conflict in the region and call for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza.
Iran's attack on Israeli-occupied territories has garnered widespread support from Pakistanis, particularly due to their perceived alignment with the plight of people in Gaza. The warm reception of Tehran's operation by the Pakistani nation highlights its desire for a more assertive response to Israel's ongoing atrocities against Palestinians. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
German police have stormed the pro-Palestine conference in the capital Berlin and arrested a number of participants. The Palestine Congress was an important event for the Palestinian solidarity movement in Europe. It was set to be held in the German capital from April 12 to 14. The participants aimed to denounce Israeli apartheid and genocide and Germans' complicity in the genocide of the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip.
We are the Palestine Congress. We accuse the Israeli state of carrying out genocide. And we accuse the German government of supporting, of abetting, of making possible this genocide.
On Friday afternoon, several hundred activists assembled in South Berlin to attend the conference. Soon after the conference started, it was interrupted by the city's police, which had dispatched more than 900 police officers to the area. Outside the conference venue, police officers arrested a man for hoisting a Palestinian flag on a building. The participants inside the conference venue also faced repression. Even the registered journalists were refused entry by the police officers who had been deployed inside the conference hall.
I was in the list, and as the moment as I came, they told me I'm not allowed to enter because there were too many people already inside.
The first part of the conference focused on the history of Palestine.
May marks 76 years since the Palestinian Nakba, 76 years of colonization, of forced exile. However, next month also marks 76 years of resilience, 76 years of a struggle for liberation.
The German police stormed the event during a speech by the Palestinian researcher Salman Abu Sita, who addressed the conference via video link because he had been not allowed to enter Germany. Police said he was subject to a ban on political activity in the country.
The Palestine Congress was happening. We were watching a video. The police came and shut down the electricity. They didn't give a justification about it. They didn't tell us why. Nevertheless, the police came here, shut it down, said it in the loudspeaker. People are supposed to leave the building right now. You see, they're already taking people.
Chaotic scenes followed. At least two people were arrested inside the hall and several others were interrogated. German Interior Minister Nancy Faeser hailed the police, saying it was good how the police had reacted.
An hour after the start of the conference, German police stormed the conference hall because of a speech on the history of Palestine. In an act of extreme repression, they broke up the conference, declaring it an illegal assembly. However, the Palestine Solidarity Movement vows to continue the conference. Dieter Reinisch from Berlin.
Just one day after France's foreign minister earned praise for saying that sanctions on Israel could be coming over their refusal to allow humanitarian aid to Gaza, he quickly backtracked in a session before Parliament. Many are saying the episode revealed the uniquely powerful sway Zionism has in France.
France, although it has the biggest Jewish community in Europe, has also the most extreme right-wing anti-Palestinian Jewish community in Europe. And this community, this Jewish community in France, has a lot of saying and a lot of control over the media, over the political class. So you have very few people within this community who are protesting what's going on in the Middle East. Not like the United States and Great Britain.
The majority of France's Jews fled from former French colonies in Africa once those countries gained independence in the 1950s and 1960s, and they reportedly brought with them stringent anti-Arab and pro-imperialist views. In 2019, French Parliament controversially and incorrectly equated anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism, and they are currently reviewing a proposal to fully criminalize anti-Zionism.
They're saying straight, anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism. Therefore, any criticism of Zionism, any criticism of Israel, means you are a criminal because you're an anti-Semite. And so it's killing all debate. Now, all throughout the collective West, but especially in France, the number one threat to freedom of speech is the Zionist movement and the pro-Israeli movement. And I weigh my words because it's very, very dangerous to say something like that in France because you'll find yourself in court.
Since October 7th, support for Hamas and even support for Palestine is often being prosecuted as so-called apology for terrorism. Pro-Palestinian demonstrations were banned nationwide for weeks, leading to thousands of fines on protesters, with protesters arrested and prosecuted for apology for terrorism for as little as carrying a Palestinian flag. Without the ability to openly criticize the policies of Israel, many believe it's difficult to imagine that Paris will reduce its unconditional support for Tel Aviv, no matter how many atrocities and war crimes they commit against Palestinians. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
South Korea's progressives extended their majority in the National Assembly in an election largely seen as a repudiation of conservative President Yoon Suk-yeol and his People Power Party. Democratic Party leader Lee Jae-myung promised to work for the greater good.
The ruling and opposition parties must work together to solve livelihood problems. We will spearhead the efforts to overcome the livelihood crisis. I once again express deep gratitude to the South Korean people.
Many South Koreans feel President Yoon has been overstepping his powers with a series of missteps and controversial measures, including the failure to resolve an ongoing doctor's strike.
There were too many cases where this government pushed through policies that made no sense, as if it were a dictatorship.
While the vote revolved around Yoon and the economy, with problems such as a lack of affordable housing and increasing polarization, Yoon's foreign policy latitude will also be curtailed.
This is really bad news for President Yoon. He's going to have an extremely hard time getting anything through the National Assembly. And what's more, it may jeopardize some of his great relations that he's formed with the U.S. and Japan during his presidency.
A new progressive party launched by Cho Guk, a former justice minister, won 12 seats in the assembly, further tipping the scales against President Yoon and his People Power Party.
The two-thirds majority enjoyed by progressives in the assembly will enable them to fast-track legislation and push their liberal agenda. Meanwhile, President Yoon's pro-business reforms stand little chance of becoming law, with Yoon something of a lame duck for the final 3 years of his five-year term. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Italy's Foreign Minister Antonio Tajani has released a new statement following Sunday's drone attack on Russian-held Zaporizhzhia power plant in eastern Ukraine. Tajani said the risk of creating a new Chernobyl must be averted and that a free zone around the nuclear plant must be immediately declared. He also advised against fighting in the vicinity of the nuclear plant. A few days ago, during a celebration for the 75th NATO anniversary, Tajani hinted at the possibility of resuming ties with Russia in the future.
We are not at war with Russia. We criticize Moscow's policies, but we are not at war with the Russian people, and we definitely intend to resume relations with the Russian people.
It is the first time Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant, the largest in Europe, has been targeted in military action since November 2022. On Tuesday, Russia blamed Ukraine for launching drone attacks on the plant for a third day, but Ukraine denied an involvement.
The Italian Foreign Ministry's position on the nuclear plant attack is very interesting.
Rome, for the first time since the start of the conflict in Ukraine, is not just taking the side of Kiev, but it is pragmatically looking at the interests of the whole of Europe, without focusing on who is to blame for the attack.
Also on Tuesday, the European Union foreign policy chief Josep Borrell reiterated a warning that the UN's atomic watchdog IAEA issued earlier this week. Borrell said the reckless drone attack in Zaporizhia increases the risk of a dangerous nuclear accident. Italy has often reaffirmed its unwavering support for Ukraine, despite Russia's warning against such moves. The Italian government has so far approved 6 military support packages to Kiev, inclusive of both lethal and non-lethal equipment and specialized military training activities. Max Civili, Rome.
In the limelight.
Operation True Promise paralyzed the integrated capabilities of the U.S. and the Zionist entity in the field of electronic warfare, and is undeniable proof of the ingenuity in tactical design of Iranian defense industry experts. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Kahan International wrote, "The so-called Iron Dome turned into a tattered tin shed as Iranian drones and missiles scored a strategic victory over U.S. technology to zero in on vital military targets in the heart of the usurped land of Palestine by piercing with precision the multi-layered defense system set up by U.S.-Israeli planners from the occupied parts of Iraq and Syria and throughout Jordan for protection of the illegal Zionist entity." Operation True Promise, launched in the early hours of Sunday, April 14th, was part of the vengeance vowed by the Islamic Republic as punishment for the Zionist violation of the diplomatic immunity of the Iranian consulate in Syria on April 1st, that led to the martyrdom of 7 Iranian citizens. The murderous entity, ruled by a criminal clique of non-Semitic East European claimants to Judaism, is flabbergasted at Iran's powerful reach, although, as usual, it pretends to have intercepted most of the projectiles, and that only minor damage was inflicted, with a few persons injured, but no one killed. This is nothing except sheer hypocrisy for the cowardly killers of over 33,000 civilians in Gaza over the past 6 months, who survive on American support and whose only pastime is raining death and destruction on others, when the fact of the matter is that Iran's retaliation was not designed to indiscriminately kill the innocent, but to destroy Israel's arteries of atrocities. This is fully evident by at least seven of Iran's hypersonic missiles striking the Nevatim Air Base in the Negev Desert that houses the supposedly stealth U.S.-supplied F-35 fighter planes and putting it completely out of use, so that the people of Gaza could be relieved for the first time of the daily bombing that kills hundreds of them and destroys their infrastructure every passing day. This particular strike was similar to the January 2020 barrage of Iranian missiles on the Al-Assad airbase of the U.S. in Iraq in retaliation for the unmanly murder of General Qasem Soleimani that was turned into a mess with no one killed but over 100 American occupation forces inflicted with brain injuries. In the words of Scott Ritter, a former UN weapons inspector, who hailed Iran's response and confirmed the striking at the Nevatim Air Base, Israel is defenseless against Iran's weaponry. It confirms the fact that Iran's rapidly advancing drones and missiles clearly outsmart the various U.S.-manufactured aircraft, including the F-15, F-16, F-35, and refuelers that form the backbone of the Zionist regime's unbridled terrorism in Gaza, Lebanon, and Syria. In other words, Operation True Promise paralyzed the integrated capabilities of the U.S. and the Zionist regime in the field of electronic warfare, and is undeniable proof of the ingenuity in tactical design of Iranian defense industry experts. All said and done, it was a warning to the enemy that any foolish move now will lead to a swift and more powerful retaliation by Iran, this time to flatten Tel Aviv and Haifa, as could be borne out by several of the guided projectiles that flew over the Knesset or the so-called Israeli parliament without the leveling it to the ground in order to herald the Islamic Republic's mastery of the skies.
Yani.
Bazaar.
If you look around, nearly every object you see is made of raw material extracted from a mine. Basically, if you can't grow it, you have to mine it. The extraction of minerals, metals, and fuels from the ground is one of humankind's oldest industries. Never more than now has society been so dependent on greater variety and larger volumes of mined products. So it's no surprise that mining fuels our modern world and makes economies grow. Hello and welcome to another edition of Bazaar. I'm your host Alireza Ikhtiarzadeh, and this week we will be exploring the mining industry while shining the spotlight on the machinery used in this sector. We wanted to see what types of machines are used and who is actively manufacturing them. Plus, we wanted to understand why the mining sector is crucial to the national economy and how manufacturers contribute to its progress. So, let's roll out the show. We'll be right back. Our quest for answers led us to Shahrud City in Semnan province, where we visited a company specializing in manufacturing various mining machines. With nearly 20 years of experience, this knowledge-based company is active in a host of fields. It conducts research, development, and production of equipment needed in various industries. That being said, it also manufactures a variety of excavating, drilling, trenching, and digging machines. The life of any product begins in the design room. This company has researched and developed these machines and has perfected their performance. Optimizing the machine size, speed, and power to carry out tasks has also reduced the expenses related to